Hey y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another edition of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm a board-certified gynecologist, sex med specialist, and menopause expert. I am located in downtown Chicago. I have my own concierge practice associated with Ms. Medicine, a national concierge network of clinicians that are dedicated to unhurried, extensive, complete body visits for women. And I am their first gynecologist, so super excited to be part of that network. I'm also coming out with a new book coming up. Hopefully, I've turned in the manuscript. I've released the picture of my front cover, so I'm excited about that. And it's all about sexual health. It's about libido. It's about orgasm. It's about pain. It's about the pelvic floor. It's about hormones. And it's from a unique perspective, which is mine as a South Asian who is been practicing sexual medicine for the last over a decade, been an OBGYN for 20 years. And so it's a unique perspective talking about my journey and my patient's journey and women of color who are now going to be centered in this book as opposed to an afterthought. But it also, so for if you're a clinician who wants to learn more about how to help women of color, that's one thing. If you're just trying to learn some 101 sex med, perimenopause, menopause things, you know, I talk about all of it. And so hopefully when it comes out, you guys will really enjoy. Anyway, so that's coming up. And when it comes closer, I've been dropping some brown girl disease. It's called Brown Girl's Disease, A Guide to Sexual Health and Empowerment Through a South Asian Lens. And I've been dropping a lot of quotes from my book. So I'm excited. As soon as I find out a publication date, I'll let you guys know. And it's going to be a good one. I think you guys will like it. It's going to be informative and funny and all the good things. Anyway, today I thought I would do a solo podcast because last week was the Menopause Society meeting. I had every intention of going. I had a ticket. I had my room set. And then my kids were sick all weekend. And I got sick the day I was going to fly. And then thought, there's no way I'm flying today. So I canceled. And I did it remotely. So I've been looking at the videos and watching the videos all weekend as I laid in bed. And so now I'm feeling a little bit better and back to work and all the good things. So, Vagilantes, I'm here to talk to you about something that really nobody really warned us about. And it's about the real changes that happen as soon as estrogen decides to, quote unquote, leave the chat. I think I saw a button one day that says estrogen has left the chat. Anyway, it's not just about the hot flashes or night sweats that I want to talk about. I want to talk a little bit more about what was discussed at the Menopause Society meeting with regard to heart, bones, brain, and gut. So really what's happening, you know, from a non-sexual medicine perspective, but we know that sexual health is health, and the first signs of sometimes heart disease, hypertension, hypercholesterolemia is, you know, just like for men, erectile dysfunction, it can be for women, new arousal or orgasm issues that come up. Anyway, this meeting was in Orlando. A bunch of my friends DM'd me and were texting me pictures. I got calls throughout the weekend, you know, telling me about the latest and greatest gossip happening. There was a big fiasco that happened. Actually, I wanted to address, it's not a huge fiasco, but the Menopause Society always releases abstracts to the press via press release. So there was a press release Wednesday, the day of the conference starting, and the press release said that there was a new study, a retrospective chart review that showed when starting hormones in perimenopause, you decrease the risk of heart disease, stroke, and breast cancer. I think it was by 60%. Now, there's no information given. I actually was called by Self Magazine, an awesome Erica Sloan, who is one of the reporters. I spoke to her and I was like, Erica, you know just as much as I do at this point. I've read the abstract and, you know, whatever it means, it's a retrospective chart review. It's correlation. It's not causation. It's a review of actually databases, right? So it wasn't even the charts. Like, it was a huge review of over 120 million databases for women that had used estrogen, women that had not used estrogen pre and then postmenopause, and then looking at their ICD-10 codes. So really, it's just looking at their codes. And so everyone knows that some of us don't code great. We sometimes will code wrong. So there's a lot of variables involved. But it did, after showing some statistical analysis, the women that had been on the estrogen actually had these reduced risks, which, you know, a lot of it is consistent with what we saw in the WHI. Estrogen alone decreased the risk of breast cancer. Estrogen alone decreased the risk of colon cancer. We know medroxyprogesterone acetate, Prempro, which is what was studied in the WHI, was the culprit when it came to the increased risk of breast cancer. Anyway, long story short, I commented on it based on the little that I knew. But then what my point, take-home point was really that, you know, we have to take perimenopausal women and their complaints seriously. And we have to do what's best for them, take their complaints seriously, and treat them accordingly. And if it turns out that long-term health consequences are reduced, then that's gravy. But when a woman comes into you suffering, confused, distressed, and we blow it off saying that they're still getting regular cycles, and so therefore they can't be in perimenopause and they can't be treated, then that is doing them a huge disservice, okay? Because women suffer a lot in perimenopause. As someone going through perimenopause right now, I can tell you it sucks. And I know what I'm doing. I know when I should be on what, and I know how to do it, and it still sucks. So the reality is it's a difficult time. We're trying to, you know, diminish the large hormonal estrogen-specific fluctuations. So, you know, it's a very difficult time. And so my point to the reporter was, you know, maybe there is some long-term health benefits, but at least in the short term, women shouldn't suffer. Anyway, the article was really blown up. You know, everyone was talking about it, reposting it. You know, a lot of quote-unquote influencers were posting about it. It actually was retracted later. What happened was the press release was under the umbrella of the student who was involved in the study. It actually turns out Dr. Rachel Pope, if you go to my previous interview with her, she's amazing in Cleveland. She's awesome. She actually was somebody who was the PI for this study, and she didn't get the memo that it was leaked. So she was like, I can't. And I talked to her that night, and she was like, I can't actually talk about it yet because the abstract hasn't even been presented at the Menopause Society, but it like exploded. Anyway, the point is, it was a flawed research, but it did show correlation of reduced risks, which is gravy if you're already treating patients the way you should, right? So that's my point. Anyway, so I want to talk a little bit about what is some of the takeaways from the menopause conference. I'm going to focus a little bit about some of the cardiovascular takeaways. I'm recording this on the day before my mom's 1 year death anniversary. So I'm reliving the last week of her life, and she died of a myocardial infarction. She had a huge heart attack. She died on the table being coded in a very awful way as she was trying to get emergently to the cath lab, had vomiting and back pain. And basically, as Jane Morgan pointed out in the podcast that I did with her, when we other symptoms of cardiovascular disease for women, saying that it's not normal, we other them, and therefore they're not taken seriously, and they're not actually considered a prime thing that should be evaluated. So, you know, it actually is more normal for women not to have crushing elephant on my chest, substernal chest pain. And so I think that should be evaluated and treated appropriately. And we have to realize that women usually die from their first heart attacks much more frequently than men. And systemic sexism has something to do with that, as well as our lack of research. So I tuned into the cardiovascular, and maybe I'll break this up and talk about just the heart stuff today, because I found it to be very interesting and very relevant, right? Cardiovascular disease is still the number one killer in women. I mean, there were some great talks, but there was a lot of it was very basic. I want to talk about some of the ones that were done on the gut and the brain. You know, a lot of what turns out to be some of the work on the brain and cognition, you know, talking about brain fog and some of these things was Dr. Pauline Mackey here. She's in Chicago, who always has, you know, some interesting perspectives as a scientist researcher who does not clinically see patients. Take home message from her, because she talked about the brain fog issues and the menopause brain myth that, you know, that taking hormone therapy might prevent dementia. What I think she, you know, discussed in the end that, you know, 40% of women have forgetfulness in that perimenopausal transition, which is verbal learning, verbal memory. That perimenopause is a vulnerable period of time where if you take someone and they go into immediate surgical menopause, and they lose estrogen immediately and wake up in menopause after their surgery. Menopausal hormonal therapy tends to help those women, especially if they're under the age of normal menopause. And so, but otherwise, her take-home message was really that menopausal hormonal therapy has neutral effects on cognition for those women going through natural menopause, regardless of what type of formation. I think she brought in some interesting points that, again, evidence to date does not support hormone therapy for cognitive benefit for naturally occurring menopause. But if a woman has vasomotor symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats, if she has heat intolerance, if she has those palpitations, it does help if you treat vasomotor symptoms. One thing she emphasizes, it doesn't matter how you treat vasomotor symptoms, right? If you're using the new hormonal medication, non-hormonal medications. So her point was, it doesn't matter how you treat it. FDA just approved actually a non-hormonal hot flush drug called Linquet, which is linzenetate. It is similar to Veozah that was out, but this one actually helps with sleep and has been sort of studied in breast cancer survivors. So I'll do a separate sort of discussion on this new medication. But Pauline Mackey basically said that if you treat any vasomotor symptoms, even if you do what's called a stellate ganglion block, which is a block where you take like bupivacaine, you put it into the C6 vertebral area where the stellate ganglia are, and you block really for, people do it for vasomotor symptoms. They also do it for PTSD. You actually, you know, can eliminate vasomotor symptoms and as a result, reduce or actually improve your cognition. And so that was really her point, that we don't have enough evidence that says menopausal hormonal therapy has neutral effects on cognition when you have someone going through naturally occurring menopause without vasomotor symptoms. So her point being that we shouldn't say, you know, hormones are necessarily protective on cognition, which again, I think, you know, you have to look at all the information, but the data doesn't always support that in the average, you know, menopausal patient without vasomotor symptoms. Anyway, back to the heart stuff. See, I digressed. So there was a discussion around primary prevention of cardiovascular disease in women with blood pressure, lipids, and diabetes by Aaron Mikos, who's a professor at Johns Hopkins. And I found her talk to be very interesting because, you know, basically she talked about how the majority of women in midlife and beyond have hypertension. So she was looking at some data and it showed that, like, I think it was close to 70% of women in midlife and beyond have hypertension, and only 1 in 4 women with hypertension have it controlled. And so we know that in menopause, the effects of the decline in estrogen does have an effect on blood pressure. It increases relatively your androgen levels initially. It activates the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system that really promotes higher blood pressure. It increases vasoconstriction, so those vessels can cramp down more. You can have higher salt sensitivity. You have more of that mid-abdominal fat and insulin resistance, higher sympathetic activity that happens, reduced nitric oxide availability, which helps to keep vessels dilated, and you have increased weight. And all that contributes to hypertension. And she even went as far to say that hypertension that is considered white coat hypertension is not benign. She said that untreated white coat hypertension is associated with an increased risk for cardiovascular events and all-cause mortality. So that means when you go to the doctor and you say, oh, you know, my pressure is only elevated when I go to the doctor, and it's always like 160 over 80 or 140 over 90 every time I go to the doctor, they showed that, you know, if we don't treat this, because, you know, maybe you're not going home and you're not monitoring your blood pressures to see if you have persistent out of office high blood pressure. And so we're missing a lot of people with undiagnosed hypertension. So that way, someone that says they just have it in the office should get out of office blood pressure monitoring. And I think there was like a 10-year follow-up that showed like 40 to 50% of women that quote unquote had white coat hypertension actually developed hypertension. And so they had similar cardiovascular changes than someone that has a diagnosis of high blood pressure. So that's very interesting to me. They also talked about the 2025 American Heart Association blood pressure guidelines, which state that normal blood pressure should be, the top number should be less than 120 and the bottom number should be less than less than 80, the bottom number, so it's systolic, diastolic. Elevated blood pressure is 120 to 129, top number. Less than 80, again, should be the bottom number. So stage one hypertension or high blood pressure is 130 to 139 on the top number and 80 to 89 on the bottom number. Stage two high blood pressure is considered 140 or higher or 90 or higher on the bottom. And then severe high blood pressure is anything over 180 and anything over 120 on the bottom. And these are really important because these parameters aren't what you typically think. I think when I was in med school, we learned 140 over 90. So obviously things are changing. We need to keep blood pressures lower because lowering that, especially that top number, reduces major cardiovascular events in women and in men. And so I think that's really an important thing that she talked about. Also, we talked about sort of like high cholesterol issues. Obviously, genetics play a big role. I think one in 250 people have family history of high cholesterol. It's considered autosomal dominant. So we know that it exists, especially with LDL type C. And so we have to understand that this is really one of the things that continues to be undertreated. So high cholesterol, I think this happens to so many midlife women, go through their whole life, normal cholesterol, no more total cholesterol, normal LDL. And then all of a sudden you hit perimenopause. Remember, perimenopause is a time for accelerated risks. Accelerated risks mean things can change and things happen and they are an accelerated risk. Perimenopause is this time of estrogen fluctuation leads to an accelerated cardiovascular risk. That means all of a sudden people develop high blood pressure, they develop elevated LDL, which is considered the bad cholesterol. And so it's really important to evaluate this and treat it. And so we have to try to keep the LDL as low as possible. LDL over 130 seems to double your risk of heart disease, heart cardiovascular events. And really, statins can really help for primary prevention in midlife. She stated they're safe, effective, and underused. Again, I think what's very interesting, she said that white coat hypertension wasn't benign. It's a red flag. And so this is something we can't dismiss anymore. There was another cardiologist, Dr. Garima Sharma, who talked about ovarian aging and vascular aging. And so she was also from Johns Hopkins. She talked about how estrogen really, you know, should not be considered just for reproduction. We talk about this all the time, right? Estrogen's neuroendocrine hormone. It should be understood as that and not just as a quote-unquote sex hormone. It keeps your arteries flexible. It keeps inflammation down. It keeps blood flowing. But once it drops, the endothelium of the vessels do change, which is the inner lining of your arteries, and they become cranky and stiff. This results in early endothelial dysfunction. That means the LDL goes up and the HDL, which is considered good cholesterol in the past, goes down. And then you get that midsection fat. She talked a lot about endothelial damage that happens in the perimenopause, menopause transition. I thought what was really interesting is that she talked about awareness of heart disease. When we stop being aware of things, this actually can lead to mortality and morbidity, right? So this is why I do what I do, because we have to be aware of it. But what she talked about, what Dr. Sharma from Hopkins said, was that back in the day, in 2009, if you interviewed 100 people or 100 women, 65 of them would say, hey, I know that heart disease is the number one killer in women. So that awareness was at 65%. Today, if you interview 100 people, only 44 will say that they know that the heart disease is the number one killer in women. So her point was that we're losing ground and we can't out-educate the silence around heart disease. And so we got to talk about it. We got to know, yes, you know, pap smears are important, mammograms are important, bone scans are important. But the heart, we always just wait for chest pain. And women, like I said earlier when I was talking about my mom, don't even get chest pain all the time. So it really is about understanding your cardiovascular risk. And so I think that's really important. And then what I thought was really good is I'm going to probably just end after talking about this, because the bone stuff and the other stuff is really good too. So I'll have to do another podcast on this. But there was another doctor, Dr. Pooja Mehta, talked about invisible sort of heart disease. And what do I mean by that? People will get chest pain. All of a sudden, you know, they should get evaluated, a CT or an angiogram or cardiac catheterization. They'll say, oh my God, you know, there's no obstruction in your coronary arteries. Your coronary arteries feed your heart, right? And so there's a term called ANOCA, which is ischemia with no obstructive coronary arteries. It's really a heart condition where the muscles don't get enough blood, but the angiography that's done doesn't show enough blockage for the main arteries. And so what does this mean? Like, why is this happening? So she talked about something called microvascular disease, which I'm very fascinated about because I sometimes think that I have microvascular disease because I have chest pain too sometimes. Anyway, it's really caused by these small vessels. Think about the small vessels around the heart. Think about the capillaries. Women can have chest pain, fatigue, and shortness of breath, and they oftentimes have the dysfunction at the level of the mini vessels, the little bitty vessels. And they can also have spasms in the coronaries that are due to the nerves that are kind of feeding the heart, right? Think about that. So the autonomic, the nervous system, the parasympathetic, the sympathetic, right? The nervous system is so intricately involved in sort of your heart and its response. And nobody thinks about the fact that microvascular angina can exist or that these coronary arteries can spasm. And so Dr. Pooja Mehta from Emory talked about what she taught when women have chest pain and have normal angiograms. And she told a story. I think there's like a woman in her 40s, classic angina, normal stress test, perfect cholesterol, couldn't climb up stairs. You know, all of a sudden she realizes that she has coronary microvascular dysfunction, MVD. And so these small arteries, when they don't dilate like they should, also can become a big problem. And so PET scans, cardiac MRIs can show reduced flow reserve. So there's the flow reserve can be less than 2. And then they can also have heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. So these are some of the terms. I'm not a cardiologist, so just telling you what she said. And so it really is important to understand the mind-heart connection. You hear about people who die from heart attacks after their loved ones die because of broken heart disease. I mean, these kind of things exist because the mind and the heart are intricate. Then the mental stress and mental load, especially of women who are caretakers and, you know, have so much on their plate. There's something called mental stress ischemia, which is another hidden killer of women. Mental stress ischemia is when women develop this ischemia, you know, and for all you non-medical people, ischemia is where a condition where you just get reduced flow to an organ or tissue, right? So and that's what a heart attack is, right? Like the blood's not getting into the heart. So, you know, you have less blood going there. So with less blood flow, then, you know, you have parts of the heart that can die. And so, you know, there's something that they've termed mental stress ischemia where women develop this diminished flow to the heart because especially during times of high emotional stress, even when exercise stress tests are normal, even when your CT angio is normal. And so there is a sympathetic nervous system surge of, you know, your catecholamines and all these things that constrict small vessels that cut off the microcirculation to those little bitty vessels. And all of a sudden the stress. Yes, it's stress. That's why stress reduction is such an important part of lifestyle management and lifestyle medicine. But when you have that stress, it can cause physical and measurable damage. So, you know, there's even showing sort of like PET images of women's hearts during emotional tasks. I think that's even how they test some of the microvascular. She was talking about how they make them do some like funny mental math and make them get really angry and irritated to kind of assess some of the microvasculature. And you could see that some of these emotional tests and stress actually cause reduction in flow. And I was just thinking, man, how many women were told they had panic attacks when they actually just had reduced perfusion, right? Like, this is kind of real. I mean, maybe you had both, but I mean, when women are dying like this, you got to think about it. So really, they sometimes will do a CT angio first to make sure that you don't have coronary artery disease. That you can get a PET or an MRI to see sort of like the coronary reserve flow. And then they can also do some invasive coronary reactivity testing or something called EndoPAT, So she talked a little about that. And so there's certain centers that do it. You have to find someone that is specialized in women's heart centers. It's sort of the EndoPat is sort of a non-invasive medical test that measures the function of the inner vessels, the endothelial function. And so kind of assesses that through an EndoPat test. And so some people will get treated with some beta blockers for controlling the sympathetic nervous system. They might get a calcium channel blockers to relax the microvasculature. They can get treated with ACE inhibitors to improve like the function of the endothelium, the inner vessels. And then, they can also get medications to reduce angina or chest pain, statins to really enhance the nitric oxide and reduce inflammation. And sometimes menopausal hormone therapy, of course, can restore endothelial function. But the biggest thing is really about reducing our stress, right? I always talk to patients about this. It's probably my biggest problem. I'm so stressed out all the time. But cardiac rehab, yoga, cognitive behavioral therapy, paced breathing, all of this can improve that microvascular tone. So this isn't something that like a stent will fix. It's really about trying to figure out ways to calm your nerves, to lower your pressure, to feed the endothelium. Yes, menopausal hormone therapy helps with some of that, but we do have to figure out a way to control this mental stress ischemia. That's why, we have to find preventative cardiologists if you have a lot of heart disease in your family. If you're South Asian and you're listening and you know that you've had so many people drop dead from heart disease, you got to get on top of this, because heart medicine speaks the language of hormones, speaks the language of the human existence of how we deal with all the stressors. And so I think that is really important. The cardiovascular talks at the Menopause Society were really good, but I was really, taken by the microvascular talk. So I thought I would, talk about the heart health in honor of my beloved mother who passed away almost a year ago from a massive heart attack. And so get out there, get your stress under control, get your lipids controlled. Check out your blood pressure. Don't leave high blood pressure uncontrolled. Get out there and get on that Mediterranean diet. Watch your salt intake. Get your sleep right, right? Sleep is like another vital sign. They talked about that a lot. There's so much more I can tell you guys about, but I'll have to just break it up into a different episode. But, all the lifestyle modifications are important and stress reduction. Forget about mental stress ischemia. That is real, guys. That shit is real. You got to make sure that we're getting our stress under control. Don't carry the burden of society on your shoulders. We are living in freaking dumpster fire of a country right now that everything is happening to everybody, that people are getting taken away. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it, but like the reality is a lot of stuff is happening that will increase your sympathetic drive if you pay too much attention to it. I'm not saying not to pay attention to it, but I'm just saying balance. And get your sleep and get your diet right and get exercise. Cardiovascular health is so important. Strength training, all the good things. And get on hormones, guys, especially if you're having those vasomotor symptoms. But, we know that estrogen can help with some of the other stuff too. So I hope you learned something. I certainly did. Oh, and Dr. Mehta also in her talk talked about there's something called the www.microvascularnetwork.com and INOCA, INOCA International. That's ischemia with no obstruction in the coronary arteries. INOCA, INOCA. Those two are websites you can go to or you can refer your patients to. I'm getting a CT angio in the next couple weeks because of my mom's history. I've gotten a calcium score. I've gotten my cholesterol checked. And yes, my LDL went up a little bit this year, but I'll get it under control. But that's what perimenopause will do, guys. I had perfect cholesterol my whole life, and my LDL peeped up a little bit this year. So, check it all out. Do the right things and try to live your best health span that we can give ourselves. I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned a little bit of something. Make sure you make people aware that heart disease is the number one killer in women. And let's think about her. Oh, don't smoke either. Don't forget, if you're a smoker, quit today, because, that is the one thing every cardiologist will tell you. Like, that is a big no-no when it comes to your heart and your cancer risks. So all the things, do what you need to preserve your sanity. I'm Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Thanks for joining me for another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Remember, I'm here to educate so you could advocate. Please join me for another episode. Thanks. If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.